Okay, welcome back to Tech and Learning Conversations. I'm Kevin Hogan, and today I've got some genuinely good news to share. And if you've been following education news lately, you know that's not something we get to do very often these days. My guest today is Rachel Broadhead. She's the State Project Director for the Alabama Math, Science, and Technology Initiative, and she works with the state on their curriculum and getting best practices together for professional development for teachers. We're going to talk about how you can get teacher buy-in without mandates to work with programs like this, how concrete manipulatives and hands-on learning keep students engaged even in a post-COVID era, and why Alabama didn't see the learning loss and the dip that most states experienced. Rachel's going to help explain how they work from both bottom-up and top-down, supporting teachers who want help while also creating a clear statewide vision across all their districts. So let's get into it. Okay, Rachel, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Kevin. It's great to be with you.
And let's get right into it. Always love to have some good news to report, especially these days and post-COVID. So many conversations about learning loss and trying to regain ground. And, it's been a very difficult time. So when your program, your initiatives kind of came across my transom here with actual scores improving in math, no less, I thought it would be great to catch up and figure out what is in the special sauce with your program.
Yeah, we are so proud of that, right? And not to disparage our state or anything, I think Alabama's not really on people's radar in terms of educational innovation and advancement, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Usually, that's where you're hearing the bad news come from, right? Which I think is a misnomer in a lot of ways, because you have a lot of great, I know a lot of great innovative educators in Alabama. There's a great state ed tech conference once a year.
Yeah,
I've always heard about, but never been able to go to.
You should come. It's good. Yeah.
Let's get into it. Scores are up year over year, 2 years over 2 years. Give us a little context.
So I guess big picture, Kevin, that would be that historically, for as long as I can remember in my educational career, Alabama's, we've been at the bottom of the NAEP pile, right? We kind of jockeyed back and forth with Mississippi for 52nd place. And that's been an issue, right? That's a big issue for a lot of people, not just educators, but also parents and workforce development, economic outlook, all that kind of stuff. So quite some time ago, back in the late 90s, actually, the governor at the time seated this blue ribbon committee and said, figure it out. What are we going to do to make this different? And fast forward many years, they created this project, AMSTAN, the Alabama Math, Science, and Technology Initiative. And it took us a little while to get it off the ground, really. But now we have good statewide coverage and we have field-based project staff that can provide resources, wraparound supports, things like that. And we're seeing it move the needle, right? Like you're asking specifically about math. So what did we do to go from 52nd to now, like in the most recent NAEP release, we're 32nd, right? Like we are in the middle of the pack.
That's really a big. And, again, I mean, in my reporting of other things, we usually end up, reporting about one math teacher, right, in an elementary school who does this amazing, innovative thing, and they make a screenplay about her, and it's just kind of like this turnaround thing. I just found from your perspective that you've had to work at scale, right? So this is beyond just one classroom or one school, and try to, kind of infect the rest of the state with it. Talk a little bit about the initiative to taking that one classroom and making it sort of a statewide culture.
Yeah, we would call it grassroots. We avoid the infect analogy. we would call it grassroots, which is kind of a misnomer, but it's what's always been near to the heart of the people that work in the project. And the reason we call it grassroots is because it, in order to make a system-wide change, right, in order to improve educational outcomes for all students in Alabama, and we have some challenges, right? Like we have some large subgroups experiencing significant disadvantages as a state. We have those disadvantages, right, kind of globally. What are we going to do so that it's not an issue of just a few of the privileged to get something, but how do we impact outcomes for everybody, right? How do we do it in a way that that's reasonable and equitable and affordable? Because one of our biggest challenges is poverty, right? So we think grassroots, but in actuality, what we use is more like a diffusion of innovation model. So we've been on this ramp, right, up towards our critical mass, teacher by teacher by teacher, classroom by classroom, school by school by school, by district by district by district. And we do it regionally. So we might be a statewide initiative. We're part of the Education Trust Fund budget, where our vision for high quality math comes from our State Department, all of those things. But we have the benefit of regional hubs. So we have people who are closer to the classroom than most statewide initiatives or implementations have a chance to be. Does that make a little bit of sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it kind of partially answers my next question, which is about, you know, the essential part, I assume, for this is teacher buy-in. And I know, again, just through the years that, you know, between various pieces of software or particular curriculum strategies or consultants or, that come in at the beginning of every school year that are going to magically turn everything around, and they have a three-day workshop right before Labor Day, or down in Alabama, it's probably even a little bit earlier. And teachers roll their eyes like, oh, here comes another one, right? And it comes in. But it seems to me that there must be some sort of positive response and buy-in from the teachers.
Yeah, that I think is partly related to the diffusion of innovation approach, right? Like we support people earlier who want support, right? People who are drawing on the resources of the project, people who are asking, people who want, people who need. And at the same time, we support people who don't have, like they don't even have the headspace because the situation is challenging. They don't have the headspace to say, you know, I really need you to come help me make this better, because they're just surviving in a moment. So we think about how do we get at the core of the classroom without imposing ourselves on people, without requiring, right, without mandating things. And we do that really just by sharing classroom practice. So the thing we have, the benefit, I think one of the biggest benefits of the project is that we have enough people around the state that we can be side by side in instruction, and we're perfectly willing to share the messiness in a classroom. And what we've learned is that when a teacher chooses to focus on increasing classroom discourse, right? Like I need to see, I need to know, I need to hear, I need to understand what my students are thinking, specifically in this context, in terms of their math understanding, I need to see that. So I need them talking about math. And when students talk more about math, it means that teachers have to rise to the level, they have to raise the level of their professional thinking. And when a teacher's professional thinking rises, students give you something different. And when students give you something you've not seen before, it makes you as a teacher increase your professional discourse with others, right? You're like, wait a minute, these kids are doing something I've never seen third grade kids do before. These fifth graders are asking me questions about math I might not totally understand myself, and they seem to get it already, right? So like, what we do is we push in side by side in the classroom. It's a lot of job embedded support, which we all the research says, which we all know, if you're going to adopt a new skill, you got to practice the skill. And we just push in and share the messy. So that was a long winded way to say grassroots, but yeah, we're working bottom up, pushing in side by side, sharing instruction in the classroom and top down, right? So our State Department does a really good job of articulating a clear and compelling vision for math instruction, high quality math instruction. And then we have these regional sites who can support building and district leaders in figuring out, how do I provide the support to make space for what's happening in these classrooms to spread?
You spoke a little bit about the students and the third graders and the fifth graders, and that was kind of leading into my next question about student engagement. That is a real important theme that's popping up this year. Talk a little bit about that. And even, again, we've got big picture and historic. I mean, students these days are different than they were even 5 years ago. And more difficult to keep engaged, right, with all of the various distractions that are out there. Talk a little bit about some of those supports and resources that you provide to keep kids engaged.
Yeah, I think that's another part of our secret sauce. It shouldn't surprise me. Like if I, in the beginning, I could have said to you that our project, the statewide AMSTA initiative, it's often been referred to as a three-legged stool because there are three things we do. We provide professional learning opportunities, we provide resources, and we provide job-embedded on-site support, right? So now you're just asking about the other one. And one of the things that I think, what I meant earlier about, I think that's one of the biggest benefits of our project, is that we actually provide the resources that teachers need to do really active, interactive, hands-on. It has a million different names you could call it. It's had, if you ride the pendulum of education, it's been called from this all the way over to that. But what we're talking about is learning that's not just pencil and paper in a book, but how do we make those ideas at the beginning concrete so that as a learner, I can touch and manipulate and interact within the concrete space? And then how do we transition that to a more representational interaction so that ultimately I can abstract them as a learner? And that's one of the things the initiative provides. So like if I was going to sort of mention the science side of things, I would say that you get like a lab in a box, right? As a classroom teacher that partners with us, you get a lab in a box. Instead of reading about circuits and how you build them and things, your teacher gets a box of batteries and battery holders and Fonstock clips and wires and mini bulbs and all the things, switches, so that you can build those circuits. That's an easy reach to some degree in science. To some degree, that's an easy reach in reading, right? There's been so much good PD about what good reading instruction looks like, but there's almost none available for men. So we provide those similar types of resources, math manipulatives, to the teacher so that students are engaging in that learning in the same way. And that's the biggest motivator, right? Like for me, humans made up math. We made it up in our own minds as a way to talk about the world we live in. We did it to ourselves. So why not learn it in the same way, right? Like why not create a context where kindergarten kids can, as they're learning to count, can recognize that there's more than just the rote count sequence, right? To recognize that, I should probably be organized while I count, or I might lose track, right? All the way up to, say, in algebra, right? Where, you want me to factor this polynomial. I don't know what factor is, not sure what polynomial is, but you give me these cubes, these blocks that are different sizes that have relationships. And I can move these blocks around until look, here are the factors. They're right here on this model. So that's I think, a big part of keeping kids engaged. And for us so far, it's working the same with post-COVID kids as it did with kids pre-COVID. And I think that's why we didn't see the dip, right? Like we were working that way. How do we get kids to actively engage, to care about learning a subject that most people are perfectly comfortable saying, I'm not mathy.
Right, right. Now, you talk about the various resources. I also know there's some news that you recently renewed a partnership with some pretty deep professional learning where I was doing my due diligence going through it, and I kind of felt like I was back in sixth grade math, which kind of going over my head. Can you describe a little bit about that partnership?
Yeah, I think you're talking about OGAP, the Ongoing Assessment Project, which I kind of hate to give it its long name because then it makes it just sound like assessment. And for us in Alabama and for others in other states, also partnering with that group, OGAP is a lot more than just assessment. So for us, I think probably the first specialist, that's the name we get, math specialist, when we work with the project, right? The first time our project staff, AMSTA staff, had an opportunity to be part of an OGAP professional learning. Like we were people who knew the math, right? Like we already felt pretty confident with the math. We had a pretty good grasp of pedagogy for highly technical subjects. You know, we were proud of ourselves. Let's just say it like that. And we went to an OGAP training and it opened our eyes. I could probably say it blew our minds because it was like the missing piece. I can know this math or even learn it in the OGAP session, right? Like we were there with teachers from a school and we watched teachers learn math as an adult, really learn, experience math through these hands-on manipulative and this deep thinking and discourse and things, right? We watch teachers learn math that they'd probably never been masters of. And for us, who had a little bit more grasp of the math, we learned some new math, but we really learned what does it look like for the learner when they're first engaging in it? What is it when they do this? What does that mean their understanding is? And that was like the missing piece for us, right? Like we had good pedagogy, we had good content, but we didn't know how to mush the two together in a way that you could use it to make an instructional decision in the classroom, right? It was all like theory, right? It was in our zone of knowing, but not in our zone of doing.
Yeah.
And OGAP helped us move it.
And it sounds like that probably helped with the buy-in as well, right? They're being inspired, so you know that they can turn that inspiration around.
Yeah. Oh, look at there! I finally understand this math. It's going to be so much more fun to teach. And imagine it's just as much more fun for students to learn it.
Right. Right. And what sort of advice would you give to, say, a district administrator who's watching us right now, who is maybe in a state that's below 32nd and who wants to get up on par with Alabama? What would be some of the first steps that they should do after finishing listening to us?
What a great phrase, Kevin. I just have to take a second to celebrate that. You can cut this out if you need to, but wow, someone below Alabama who wants to catch up. I like that thought. I like it a lot. Big picture, I'll say this. We have administrator level support in our regional sites as well. And really, I guess, I don't know that a lot of people would directly cite this research, but really we try and support leadership, district leadership, like you asked, with managing complex change, because that's really what this is. We're talking about breaking lifelong ingrained habits about what it means to do math in school.
Yeah.
So if I was going to make any recommendations to district or even building level leadership, it would be that you have to figure out how to create the time and space for this to happen job embedded. You can buy the training for your teachers. That's going to get you a bump. That's going to increase teacher motivation. It's going to give them knowledge and some skills that they didn't have before, right? What does good math instruction look like? That's not a PD you can buy just anywhere. And you can get that from OGAP. But the other thing you have to do as a leader is you have to make space for the rest of the elements of that complex change. And there's plenty of easy ways to embed that, right? For example, I think about the PLC structure, right? The four PLC, Solution Tree, whoever, Marzano, whoever you want to echo. It's about an opportunity for teachers to come together, look at the demonstrated understanding that they're getting from their students, and think deeply about the instructional decision that they need to make in order to respond to individuals, right? So you have to figure out, as a building level leadership, what ways can I provide incentives for this? What resource support do my people need, right? I can't send you to OGAP. Think about how these beaded number lines are so super helpful to teach kids to add and subtract and then not give you pony beads and shoestrings so that you can make them, right? So there's a little bit of resource, but the resources are really affordable in the grand scheme of things. And you got to have an action plan. How are you going to make it job embedded support? And you don't have to have an extra person to do that. Like, sure, we can get maybe gains a little bit faster because we have those people outside the classroom who can push in and support. But if you create the space for the professional community to develop in your teachers, they'll support each other. Because when those teachers start behaving differently instructionally, their students will respond differently. Their students will give them more than they've gotten in the past, which makes the teacher want to reach out to others to think about, what do I do next? And it's like a spiral staircase, right? Everybody's like kind of stumbling up the spiral staircase together. but you have to make that community. It's almost, I shouldn't say almost impossible, but I it's really hard to be consistently implementing those methodologies by yourself behind the closed door of your one classroom.
Yeah. And now while this is a success story, it's also an ongoing story, right? You can't really rest on your laurels and, you know, you want to get to 30 and 29, right? And in the next years, talk a little bit about your intentions over the next few years. What's next on the wish list? What's next on the initiatives to keep Alabama rising?
Nice. I think big picture for us, the things we're really most excited about is being able to add more people to the work, right? So when the new set of standards came out, we were all everywhere across education. We were kind of all thinking about that ramp to algebra, right? And we've recognized that we have a really good momentum. We have a good slope. We have a good rise all the way up to about eighth grade math. Maybe really it starts around seventh grade. So we're thinking, how do we bridge that gap so that we're still on a really solid ramp to algebra? So big picture for us is we've done a great job with our elementary people. We've done a great job starting to push ourselves into secondary math, into middle grades math, but we want to be really intentional about that. How do we support our kids through that middle school, through those middle school years on into algebra?
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations. Again, it's fun to have a conversation about improved teaching and learning, especially when it comes to math. I'm almost inspired to go back to school, maybe, and learn some of it. I appreciate your time and your energies, and look forward to covering you guys as you continue to improve.
Well, thank you so much for taking a minute to talk with us. Anytime to celebrate our success is a great opportunity for us. It's new.
And it's, yeah, feels good. So
thanks. Yeah.
So I want to thank Rachel for that great conversation. And if you want to learn more about ANSTE or the OGAP partnership that Rachel mentioned, check out the links in our show notes. This is a model worth studying, especially if your state or district is struggling with math outcomes. Once again, thanks, Rachel, and for the incredible work happening across your state. And if this episode gave you some hope or some practical ideas that you could bring back to your district, please share it with your colleagues. And subscribe to this page so you don't miss more conversations about what's actually working in education. I'm Kevin Hogan, and I'll catch you at the next episode of Tech and Learning Conversations.